Thornton Wilder wrote one time, "We can only be said to be alive in those moments when our hearts are conscious of our treasure." According to research, America's favorite day of the year is the fourth Thursday in November. Thanksgiving is a day when people focus more on what they have, not so much on what they don't have. So they're conscious of their treasure. It's also the day with the fewest number of suicides. So you could say gratitude literally saves lives. I want you to think about your favorite aspects of Thanksgiving. Maybe it's an abundance of casseroles or the wide variety of meats on the table or the vast display of desserts. Maybe it's the gathering of family. You get to hang out with that crazy aunt with stories of her 18 cats, or having to listen again to your cousin go on and on about the latest exotic vacation. Perhaps your favorite part is running the 5K Thoroughbred Classic at Keeneland with 3,000 of your closest friends. Maybe it's parking your keister on the couch while watching football games, game after game, all day long. Or you may love Thanksgiving simply for the satisfaction of a day off from work. Bottom line, it's good to be thankful. It's good to take a day away from our routine to practice some gratitude. Expressing gratitude, saying thank you, that's never a bad thing. As I was thinking about this Thanksgiving message for today, there were two events which came to mind, and both of them are kind of part of NBA lore. Before I tell you about these two NBA players, consider this. Typically, when we express thankfulness, we have another person in mind, someone who's done something nice or thoughtful or sacrificial for us. We say thank you when someone does something as simple as holding a door open. We say thank you when someone buys our lunch. We say thank you when someone goes out of their way to say something encouraging to us. We may send an email or a text to someone thanking them for making us aware of something we need to know. More often than not, the focus of our gratitude is another person. Hardly ever do you write a thank you note to yourself, right? Okay, now for the NBA story. At the ESPYs, I believe it was at the ESPYs several years ago, Carmelo Anthony received some sort of award, and he came to the mic, and in front of everyone who was attendance and all those who were tuned in on the television, he said something like this. He said, "I'd like to thank myself for all the hard work I put in to get to this point." And then in 2011, he kind of did it again on a different occasion. He said this, "I'd like to take my hat off to myself for dealing with all the stuff that goes on and still go out and play at a high level. I don't think an average person can walk in my shoes." I don't think I'd ever heard anyone just come out and say, "I'd like to thank myself for being so awesome." Now for the other story. Let's turn the camera on Kevin Durant. Durant won the NBA's Most Valuable Player Award in, I believe it was 2014, and he had a classic acceptance speech that I want you to watch. It's kind of condensed to about 2 minutes, but watch him accept this award. But I warn you, this video clip comes with a tissue warning. So let's watch this.
Wow. Thank you guys so much. I'm usually good at talking, but I'm a little nervous today. I come from a small county outside of Washington, D.C. It's called PG County. Me, my mom, my brother, we moved so many different places growing up, and it felt like a box. It felt like there was no getting out. My dream was to become a rec league coach. That's what I wanted to do. I wanted to stay home and help the kids out. So many people believed in me when I didn't believe in myself. So many people doubted me and motivated me every single day to be who I am. I fell so many times and got back up. I've been through the toughest times with my family, but I'm still standing. The odds were stacked against us. Single parent with two boys by the time you were 21 years old. Everybody told us we weren't supposed to be here. We moved from apartment to apartment by ourselves. One of the best memories I had is when we moved into our first apartment. No bed, no furniture, and we just all sat in the living room and just hugged each other. Because that's what We thought we made it. We wasn't supposed to be here. You made us believe. You kept us off the street. You put clothes on our backs, food on the table. When you didn't eat, you made sure we ate. You went to sleep hungry. You sacrificed for us. You the real MVP.
I had to watch this several times this week just so I could talk now. I mean, that's good stuff. It's always hard to watch a grown man cry. When you break it down, gratitude almost always involves three factors. First of all, you have a benefit. You receive something which you recognize as good. Like someone giving me a Mountain Dew or a chocolate chip cookie. You know, that would make us friends for life. If someone gives you something you don't see a need for, you're probably not all that thankful. When you hear the phrase, "it's the thought that counts," you're most likely referring to something that isn't all that significant to you, and you really wish they would have thought a little bit more before giving you this gift that you kind of see as lame. King David checks off a list of valuable benefits he has received from God in Psalm 103. We just read that, but let's look at this again. "Praise the Lord, my soul, all my inmost being, praise his holy name. Praise the Lord, my soul, and forget not all his," what? His benefits. "Who forgives all your sins, he heals all your diseases, he redeems your life from the pit and crowns you with love and compassion. Who satisfies your desires with good things so that your youth is renewed like the eagles." That's the idea of a benefit. In addition to a benefit, being involved in gratitude, next is the benefactor. You know, the first part of the word benefactor is bena, which means good, and then you have this word for factory. So a benefactor is someone who is a little factory of good, kind of like the Keebler elves. To be grateful, you need to recognize the good coming your way as intentional. It's not accidental. It's not coincidental. And this benefit you received is meant for your good. It's prompted by the goodness of the benefactor. The benefit comes with no strings attached, no expectations, no paybacks necessary. In James 1, James recognizes who the source is for good things in his life. This is verse 16. He says, "Don't be deceived, my dear brothers and sisters. Every good and perfect gift is from above, coming down from the Father of heavenly lights, who does not change like shifting shadows." God is not only a factory of goodness, he personifies goodness. We spent several weeks at the beginning of the year studying Exodus 34, where God gives us a description of himself. And if you remember, here's what he wrote to us about himself. "The Lord, the compassionate and gracious God, slow to anger, abounding in love and faithfulness, maintaining love to thousands and forgiving wickedness, rebellion, and sin." So at his core, this is who our benefactor is. So you have a benefit, and then there's a benefactor, and finally, you need a beneficiary. The beneficiary is the one who receives the good gifts from the giver. You may be listed as a beneficiary in someone's life insurance policy, and that means when they die, before you do, you'll receive a benefit, the value of that policy. Southside is the beneficiary of a trust called the Turner Foundation. Someone a long time ago decided they wanted to leave a monetary gift that would continue to give to this church. That trust is worth about $1 million, and we are one of three beneficiaries. So every quarter, we receive a distribution, and sometimes it's a lot, sometimes it's not so much, depending on how the market does, but we just turn around and give that money, that donation, to Whetstone Boys Ranch and Bluegrass Christian Camp. But think for a moment about all the benefits, the good gifts that God gives us. He gives us so much more than what we deserve, and sometimes we forget that we don't deserve what we have. I read a story of a millionaire in a small town. And this guy was kind of famous for pulling himself up by his bootstraps, so a journalist decided to do a story on him. So the journalist sat down with this guy and asked him, "You know, tell me the story of your business success." And the millionaire replied with great pride, "When we got married, my wife and I had only had a nickel between us, but that didn't deter me. I used that nickel to buy a crummy-looking apple and then spent the entire night polishing that apple to a brilliant shine. The next day, I sold it for 10 cents. And I used that 10 cents to buy two more apples. I spent the evening shining those two apples up and sold them for 20 cents. And I continued day after day until I finally accumulated $1.60. And the journalist was amazed. He's like, "Man, this is an amazing story. That's a great example of a self-made man. What happened next?" "Well, the next day my father-in-law died and left us $20 million. It's human nature to want to talk more about the part we played in our success rather than to honor God's much greater role. That's because the default mode for human race is entitlement, not thankfulness. When we believe we deserve God's gifts, we're no longer grateful. If we wonder why we keep getting more and more but are less and less thankful, it could be because we've become entitled. We sang a song last Sunday, Blessed Be Your Name. And a line in that song is this: every blessing you pour out, I'll turn back to praise. Thankful people do that. They realize the blessing comes from God and they give him the praise and thanks for that blessing. So there's a benefit, there's a blessing, there's a benefactor, which is God, and there's a beneficiary. That's us, that's you and me. Entitled people feel, they believe they deserve the good which comes their way, ignoring God and the blessing. And here's a challenging observation. When we don't get what we think we deserve, who gets the blame? We blame God, don't we? We point our finger at him and accuse him of holding out or of not caring or of ignoring us. We ask why bad things happen to good people, but we hardly ever ask ourselves this question: why do good things happen to me? Why did I get this gift? Why did I receive this benefit? We take the credit for successful seasons and we blame God for the trying times. He gets ignored during the blessings and he gets blamed when the blessings don't flow. And that doesn't seem quite right, does it? Here's a good thought to consider that I ran across. Any blessing which doesn't get turned into praise turns into pride. We think we earned it. We think we deserved it. We think we're worthy of it. And we're proud. And pride is a God repellent. Maybe one of the best starting places for growing into a person whose life is characterized by thankfulness is to embrace the truth that we don't deserve any of the good we've been given. When we start there, it's just hard to feel discontent. Discontentment is fueled by a sense of entitlement. Here's an observation to consider. An inverse relationship exists between gratitude and entitlement. The more entitled you are, the less gratitude you'll feel. And the less entitled you are, the more gratitude you'll feel. This is true, isn't it? If someone has had a tough season at work, you don't feel like you've been at your best, your numbers aren't so great for this year, you've lost a few clients along the way. You're very aware of how things have gone, but you receive kudos for sticking with it in a difficult time, or you may even get a raise going into next year. Because you didn't feel entitled, your level of gratitude would be even greater. Paul identifies two issues which mark a decadent society in Romans 1. Listen to this in verse 18. The wrath of God is being revealed from heaven against all godlessness and the wickedness of men, who suppress the truth by their wickedness, since what may be known about God is plain to them, because God has made it plain to them. For since the creation of the world, God's invisible qualities, his eternal power and divine nature, have been clearly seen, being understood from what has been made, so that men are without excuse. For although they knew God, they neither glorified him as God nor gave thanks to him. But their thinking became futile and their foolish hearts were darkened. I want you to catch this. Paul identifies two traits which lead someone to experience the wrath of God. It's in verse 21. The first one is they failed to give God glory. They failed to acknowledge him. They failed to acknowledge who he is. And they failed to give thanks. They were resistant to gratitude. And that's what made for their futile thinking. Maybe because they perceive themselves to be entitled, to be owed, not a grateful beneficiary of grace. Luke includes an encounter Jesus has one day on his way to Jerusalem, which is all about the importance of gratitude. It's in Luke 17. Here's the lead in. Verse 11. Now on his way to Jerusalem, Jesus traveled along the border between Samaria and Galilee, and he was going into the village. 10 men who had leprosy met him. They stood at a distance and cried out in a loud voice, "Jesus, Master, have pity or have mercy on us." Stop right there. You know, I've heard this referred to as the perfect prayer. Jesus, have mercy on me. That may be the best gift we could ever request from the Master. In the Gospels, you read of several people asking Jesus this same request. Some call it the Jesus Prayer. So we see 10 men with leprosy asking Jesus for mercy. Now, leprosy, you know, was a terrible disease. It was repulsive. It was incurable. The disease, I mean, it ate away at your flesh. You would have sores over your body, a constant risk of infection. And that's only half the battle. The emotional wasteland lepers experienced was additionally excruciating. Infected people were banned from society and forced to live on the outside of the outskirts of the city in leper colonies. And man, they lived a lonely life. No touch, no hug, no embrace. It's no wonder they shouted for mercy as Jesus came their way. And to top it off, this culture believed disease was a consequence for personal sin. And personal sin led to a judgment of unworthiness. Yet, they still ask for mercy from the Master. They felt the freedom to do that because of what they knew about Jesus, which says something positive about Jesus' reputation among the people. They figured they had nothing to lose and everything to gain, so why not? Here's what happened. When Jesus saw them, he said, "Go show yourselves to the priest." And as they went, they were cleansed. One of them, when he saw he was healed, came back praising God in a loud voice. He threw himself at Jesus' feet and thanked him, and he was a Samaritan. Jesus asked, "Were not all 10 cleansed? Where are the other 9? Has no one returned to give praise to God except this foreigner?" Then he said to him, "Rise and go. Your faith has made you well." This is another one of Jesus' unmiraculous miracles, like the woman who had a bleeding issue, or the centurion's son who was sick, or the blind man named Bartimaeus. It's in this miracle, there are no special words. There's no incantation. There are no pronouncements. Jesus simply tells them, "Go and find the priest." That's because the priest is the one who will be able to validate the healing, which at this point hadn't even happened yet. So as they turned and headed toward the temple to find the priest, then they realized that they had been healed. So they had to obey Jesus. They had to believe his instructions before they were cured. Look at verse 15 again. One of them, when he saw he was healed, came back praising God. One came back. That's what gratitude is, isn't it? It's coming back. It's coming back to the scene of the gift. It's coming back to acknowledge the benefit. It's coming back to say thank you to the benefactor, the factory of goodness. One came back. Only one. And don't miss this little detail. Who was the one who came back? He was a Samaritan. The Samaritan came back. The implication is that the other 9 were Jews, and they didn't come back. And this follows the theme of radical reversal you see throughout the Gospels, and especially in Luke's Gospel. The radical reversal is that those who shouldn't get it do, and those who shouldn't get it, who should get it, don't. The Jews are the ones who you would have expected to come back, but they didn't. Not a single one of them. The Samaritan is the one who shouldn't have gotten it, but he's the one who came back. He fell at Jesus' feet, and he thanked him. In light of our topic this morning, the message of this encounter Jesus has with these 10 men is pretty simple. Be the one who comes back. Be the one who comes back. Only one came back, you know? Why is that? What was so important that these other 9 guys did not take the time to thank the man who had changed their life in an unbelievable way? Jesus gave them exactly what they requested: mercy, healing. Where did they go instead of coming back? A better question might be this: where do we go? When someone gives you some sort of gift, they give you grace, they offer you a benefit, do you come back? When God steps in and pours out his goodness on you, do you come back? Do you turn every blessing into praise? Think about a few areas in your life where ingratitude might be intruding into your heart. Here are a few questions to get you started. Are you jealous because your best friend has a boyfriend and you don't? Or because most of your friends are married and you're not? Or because you see someone else with a good marriage and both your spouse and you know that yours isn't all that good right now? Maybe you've been left out of a group that you would love to be in, and it hurts. Are you disappointed that you don't have more things or newer things or nicer things? Do you often complain about your salary, your house, your clothes, your car? Do you get jealous when someone else gets something you don't have, travels to places you'd like to go? Maybe you don't like your hair, your body, the weather, the company you work for, your benefits package. You feel like you're underpaid, underappreciated, underutilized. As we wrap this up, I want to invite you to try a couple of things which may help turn your focus more toward thankfulness. Devout Israelites in Jesus' day would pray what is known as the 18 benedictions, or the 18 for short. A benediction just simply means good words, good speech. In Hebrew, a benediction was any prayer which began with the word bless. So in the morning, when the Jews woke up, they would pray 18 times, "Blessed are you, O God," and they would fill in the sentence with a blessing. In the middle of the day, they would pray the 18 benedictions. At night, they would pray 18 times again, "Blessed are you, O God." And they would pray the 18 an extra time on the Sabbath. The purpose of this benediction is simple, is to connect the gift with the giver. They were training to be thankful. They knew life was good with God, and they didn't want to stray from that truth. Maybe it would be beneficial for us to have a couple of times in our day when we hit the pause button and we give thanks to God. It doesn't need to be long. It doesn't need to be elaborate. Just enough of a pause to keep us connected to the giver, the factory of goodness. So that's one thing you could try. Here's another example that you could try that might help you be a little more focused on gratitude. This is a little more aggressive. As you greet people tomorrow, on Monday, begin your greeting with a complaint. It could be a complaint about something in your life, you know, aches or pains, stiffness, money problems, something about your job which you hate, having to wear a mask all the time, the fact that you're single, the fact that you're married. Begin your greeting that way. You know, "I wish I could have gotten more sleep last night," or, "Man, did I run into the worst traffic on Nicholasville Road this morning. Somebody's in the turn lane again going straight every day." And just do that all day tomorrow. Just everybody you greet, just have a complaint. Then on Tuesday, greet everyone you meet with a word of thankfulness. Think about something you're genuinely grateful for: family, friends, your health, the fact that you could pay the bills this month, the weather, your church, the holiday season. You could say, "You know, what a beautiful fall we've had. The colors have been amazing this year." Or, "You know, my son's teacher has been doing his best with this online learning environment. It's got to be difficult." After you try this experiment on Monday and Tuesday, ask yourself, which day produced more positive feelings in you? Which day left you feeling more energetic, more alive? I'm guessing we all know what the answer will be, because the soul thrives on gratitude. We feel better when we're grateful. And one more thing, if you do try this experiment, you might want to take Wednesday to apologize to everybody you greeted on Monday and you complained to. And that'd be a good opportunity to share the results of your experiment. Maybe you could help somebody else be a little more thankful. I want to close with these words from Colossians 3. Paul wrote these to us. It's filled with gratitude. "Let the peace of Christ rule in your hearts, since as members of one body you are called to peace, and be thankful. Let the word of Christ dwell among you richly as you teach and admonish one another with all wisdom through psalms, hymns, and spiritual songs, with gratitude in your hearts toward God. And whatever you do, whether in word or deed, do it all in the name of the Lord Jesus, giving thanks to God the Father through him." Here's the simple message this morning: be the one who comes back.